Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jeremy Rifkin, who is the author of The Zero Marginal Cost Society, The Internet of Things, The Collaborative Commons, and The Eclipse of Capitalism. He is an advisor to the European Union and to heads of state around the world, and is the president of the Foundation on Economic Trends in Washington, D.C. His latest article at the Huffington Post is Beyond Obama's Plan, A New Economic Vision for Addressing Climate Change. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jeremy Rifkin.
Nice to be with you, Ian.
And on Monday, the Obama administration unveiled its plans to curb CO2 emissions linked to climate change, tasking the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate CO2 created by power plants by 30%, reducing them by 30% from 2005 levels over the next 15 years. Obviously, in an election year, that's a touchy thing with a lot of Democrats running in coal states, one of whom is running against Mitch McConnell, who I imagine the Democrats would like to unseat. But nevertheless, my sense is that this is pretty modest, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think you're being charitable. I think it's very weak at best. And you know, it seems significant compared to what we haven't done in the last 10 or 15 years on climate change. So it's a little sad. A lot of the environmental groups are rallying to this cause because, half a loaf is better than no loaf at all, I guess. But what's so interesting about it is that even if they make all of these reforms, it's too little to address the enormity of climate change. And compared to what's happening in the European Union and now China, it's minuscule.
And as you point out in your article at the Huffington Post, Beyond Obama's Plan, A New Economic Vision for Addressing Climate Change, Jeremy Rifkin, already 27% of the electricity in Germany is being generated by renewable energy. And on Sunday, May the 11th of this year, 75% of Germany's electricity demand was generated by renewable energy. So the world is moving on. And I think in many ways, just to get a context on what you're talking about here, is the notion in your article of a third industrial revolution. Great Britain sparked the first industrial revolution. The United States led the world into the second industrial revolution. And China has set its sights on leading the world into the third industrial revolution by being the first superpower to build out an Internet of Things infrastructure and accompanying collaborative commons. So a lot of things that you have to define for us here, Jeremy. Start with the third industrial revolution, then the Internet of Things, and then the collaborative commons.
All right. Well, you know, every great economic revolution contains three components: a new way to communicate, to manage economic activity, a new source of energy, and a new mechanism for transport and logistics to move economic activity. So in the 20th century, we had centralized electricity and the telephone. Radio and television was the communication media. Cheap oil, abundant cheap oil, was the energy source. And the internal combustion engine and national road systems was the logistics mechanism to move the economic value chain. And, of course, that second industrial revolution is dying. It's on life support. Fossil fuel energies are more and more expensive. And the technologies based on these energies, like the internal combustion engine and centralized electrification, are really moribund technologies. We really can't get much more productivity out of them. So the global growth is stalling, GDP is slowing, unemployment's rising, and we are in an economic system that is proving to be at an end game. The good news is we are on the cusp of a third industrial revolution, a new convergence of communication, energy, and transport and logistics. The communication internet, which we all enjoy now, is beginning to merge in Europe, and especially Germany and now China, with an energy internet based on the same principles and a fledgling transport and logistics automated system for moving goods and services. So we're beginning to see three internets in one: the communication internet, the emerging energy internet, a automated transport and logistics internet. Together they compose a single platform called the Internet of Things. The Internet of Things is a nervous system. It's like a brain. And sensors now are being attached across the value chain. So we're monitoring data on what's going on in our food production in the agricultural fields. We have sensors sending back data to these three internets from factory floors on what's going on our production lines. Warehouses, distribution centers, smart roads are monitoring traffic with freight. So we're beginning to create a system where this internet has become a super internet of things, connecting every device and every human being in one system. Now, here's what's interesting about it. Assuming network neutrality, which is a big assumption, that this super internet of things, it stays neutral, like the internet, and it isn't monopolized by big companies, and that's a big if. This means that anybody listening to what I'm saying now, and any small business, any cooperative, any individual, can go up on this internet of things, just like you go up on the internet now. You can access all the data coming across that system. And you can then use your own analytics with your own technology, your own mobile apps, and create your own algorithms, just like Google, and be able to produce your own renewable energy, 3D printed products, at near zero marginal cost, and share them with everyone else on a new economic system that's emerging called the collaborative commons. It's already here in Europe. Let me give you an example. Let me talk about zero marginal cost, though, for your listeners. Marginal cost is the cost of producing an additional unit of a good or service after your fixed costs are absorbed. So, you know, business people have always wanted to reduce their marginal cost. It's just they never expected a technology revolution so extreme in its productivity that it could reduce marginal cost to near zero, making energy and goods and services nearly free and no longer subject to profit and the marketplace. That's the revolution that's going on that Obama's missed. You know, in the last 15 years, I don't have to tell you because you spent a life in media, we have seen zero marginal cost dramatically impact information goods. Hundreds of millions of consumers became prosumers, young people. They began to produce and share their own music, bypassing the big recording industries. Then they began to share their own news and news blogs, bypassing the traditional print and electronic media to some extent. Then they began to share their own books with free e-books and their own knowledge in Wikipedia. And they began to do this at near zero marginal cost. It doesn't cost much to produce and share information goods on a collaborative commons. And it's brought havoc to traditional media. But economists, Ian, always assumed there'd be a firewall and that the zero marginal cost would not move from the virtual world of information goods to the physical world, the brick-and-mortar world. That firewall has been breached as this Internet of Things emerges now in Germany and beginning in China. And where you're seeing it is in energy, renewable energy. This is what President Obama has missed. We have millions and millions of players in Europe, cooperatives, urban and rural cooperatives, small businesses, homeowners, who are actually producing their own solar and wind electricity, millions of them, right now, at near zero marginal cost. The technology is still pricey for harvesting the energy, solar and wind, but it's on an exponential curve by computer chips. So, you know, it used to cost, you remember, it cost $60 a watt to produce a watt of solar electricity in 1970. It's 66 cents a watt today. So it's on a similar curve, but these harvesting technologies are going to be as cheap as cell phones and desktop computers in 10 years. But even now in Europe, once you introduce a solar panel or a wind turbine, the marginal cost of producing that green electricity in Germany now is nearly zero because the sun is free. You just have to capture it. The wind is free. You just have to grab it. The geothermal heat under your ground is free. You just have to hold on to it. So in Germany, we now have 27% green electricity. We're heading to 35%. And you know who's producing it? Millions of small players. The big power companies that we thought were invincible in Germany, like E.ON, EnBW, Vattel, they have been pounced, just like the recording companies when people started to share music laterally. And they're now generating less than 7% of the new energies in Germany. The vast majority of that energy is being produced by small producer co-ops, urban, rural co-ops, families, farmers, and it's a revolution. It's power to the people. And that's now starting to migrate to China. Premier Li, the new premier, read my book, The Third Industrial Revolution. He announced when he was premier that he was a fan. And they just introduced an $82 billion four-year commitment to introduce the energy internet across China so that millions of Chinese people can produce their own solar and wind electricity and share it with each other on an energy internet. So we're beginning to see a shift from these giant vertically integrated power and energy companies that controlled the second industrial revolution of the 20th century to small players, millions and millions of small players around the world producing solar and wind at near zero marginal cost, nearly free, and sharing it with each other on an emerging collaborative commons. So it's really power to the people in a very figuratively, really, and literally. And now you're seeing it with 3D printed products. We've got hundreds of thousands of hobbyists, thousands of small startup companies who are printing out manufactured products, and they're using open source software. It's all free. And the actual material they're using to print out these products is things like recycled plastic, recycled paper. Stone and gravel is being melted down, so it's almost free filament. And then they're powering their 3D printed factories in Germany with their own renewable energy at near zero marginal cost. And within a few years, they'll be able to transport it to market the products in their fuel cell and electric vehicles, GPS guidance, again, at near zero marginal cost. That's what's happening in parts of Europe. We haven't begun to touch that here in the United States, with the exception maybe of California, the West Coast, and a few other places.
Again, I'm speaking with Jeremy Rifkin, who is the author of The Zero Marginal Cost Society, The Internet of Things, The Collaborative Commons, and The Eclipse of Capitalism. He is an advisor to the European Union and to heads of state around the world, and is the president of the Foundation on Economic Trends in Washington, D.C., and his latest article at the Huffington Post is Beyond Obama's Plan, A New Economic Vision for Addressing Climate Change. And just touching on another definition, prosumer. That is that Alvin Toffler's idea of
a
proactive...
Yeah, you and I are old enough to remember that. When he first came
I actually know him. He lives here in L.A., you know.
Well, tell him I send my warm regards. And, you know, at first I was dubious about the word, but he really did get it 30, 40 years ago. Prosumers are consumers who then become the producers as well as producing the products and services. They also consume it or share it with others. So we are seeing literally 40% of the human race is now connected to the Internet. And at one time or another, every one of those persons has been a prosumer, producing and sharing their own information. It can be YouTube videos. It can be, you know, Wikipedia contributions or whatever. But now what we're seeing in energy is even more exciting, that we have now millions of people producing their own green electricity at near zero marginal cost and sharing it, and now 3D printed products. What's happened here, which is really rather extraordinary, is we're seeing the emergence of a new economic system on the world stage. It's called the Collaborative Commons. This is really the first new economic system that's emerged since the advent of capitalism and socialism in the early 19th century. So it's a remarkable historical event. And it has big implications because it's not only that young people are beginning to use the Internet and now the Internet of Things to be able to produce and share information goods and energy and 3D printed products with each other, bypassing the market. They're also sharing their own automobiles, their own homes, their own clothes. We've got millions of young people who prefer not to own a car. They'd rather have access to mobility by either using a profit or a non-profit car sharing service. And for every car that is shared, and there are millions of kids now moving from ownership to access, they just want mobility. For every car shared in, 15 cars are removed from the road. And if you realize that the car was the centerpiece of economic growth in the 20th century, it's a big change. And from a climate point of view, we have a billion vehicles out there emitting CO2. And if Larry Burns, the former head of GM, did a study saying in Ann Arbor, Michigan, he did a study and found that we could have the same mobility we have now with 80% fewer cars if we shared them. So extrapolate that toward a billion vehicles producing CO2. We don't need 800 million of those. And the other, we can car share on a collaborative commons and connect through the web. And the other 200 million vehicles can be electric and fuel cell vehicles powered by our own green electricity. Take homes and apartments. We've got couch surfing, which I like because it's a free service, and we have Airbnb, which is commercial. But millions of young people now, they're not going to hotels, brick-and-mortar hotels. They are renting out their apartments, or they have a home and they're renting out their home because they're already paying the fixed cost on the rental and they're already paying their mortgage, so the marginal cost of making their home available for someone to use a spare room is nearly zero marginal cost. And so in New York last year, Airbnb the commercial service, they wiped out 1 million hotel nights. Now, hotels and resorts in the travel industry is 9% of GDP, and it's a huge emitter of CO2. So if more and more people are sharing their cars and sharing their homes, it means that more people are sharing fewer abodes, and that means less CO2 is being emitted. Same with clothes. We have these sites on the Collaborative Commons that share clothes, so like ThredUp and other sites. So let's say you have a kid that outgrows their clothes or outgrows their toys. You can send them back to the Collaborative Commons, and you get a credit. And as because your child's a year older, they need new clothes and new toys. And so you get a credit, and you can go up on these huge Collaborative Commons websites and pick from thousands and hundreds of thousands of items. And it may not show up in the GDP because more people are sharing fewer clothes, fewer toys. That's less CO2 emissions. That's a circular economy where we use the Internet of Things to directly engage each other. We kind of bypass the middlemen and these vertically integrated companies, and we become our own prosumers, and we begin to produce at near zero marginal costs, which means less resources used. And then what we do produce, we share with each other over and over again, and our clothes, our toys, and never goes to the landfill. This is the alternative economic vision that really will allow us to address climate change, democratize the economy, and allow a more sustainable world to flourish. And it's light years away from what Obama's talking about in just reducing emissions in old coal power plants that we're going to go out of business anyway.
Well, but the other companies that you mentioned, or at least the big sectors of our economy, the car manufacturers, the automobile accessories, tires, oil and gas, the carbon-based companies, the hotel and travel industry, they're, in effect, what you're saying is that they're no different from the coal-fired power plants. They just don't know it yet.
Yeah, that's what we're seeing. What we're seeing is, you know, we tend to think that these big global companies are invincible because the Fortune 500 companies control a lot of the GDP in the world, but they're dinosaurs. During their period of time, not all of them, a lot of them will survive, but a lot of them are going to be very, very vulnerable because we created these big companies in the late 19th and 20th century because they're the most efficient ways to manage the technologies that we had at the time. Fossil fuel energies are very centralized, and the telecommunication system of the 20th century, very centralized. So we had to create lots of capital in order to vest these companies so they could be on a national scale. And we created economies of scale, vertically integrated companies, so that we could get a return on investment, and it required a lot of capital. So the result is, by the end of the 20th century, you had 500 companies, very vertically integrated, controlling key sectors and industries. And so it's no surprise that much of the revenue went to the top. Some of the revenue flowed out to the rest of us, better wages, better jobs, but a lot of the revenue flowed to the top. And this is what Thomas Piketty missed in his book, Capital in the 21st Century. I mean, we all understood that capital was flowing to the few, but that's kind of a tautology on to say that, you know, the capitalists control the capital. What he didn't say in his book is that it was the technological infrastructure, the communication, the energy, the transport and logistics system of the 20th century that required vertical integration to put out cheap products and to be able to get the investments back and create economies of scale. What's so interesting about the Internet of Things is it's a different architecture. The Internet of Things, communication Internet, energy Internet, and logistics Internet, is designed not to be centralized. Its whole architecture is to be distributed and collaborative, and it favors peer production in lateral economies of scale. This is what the kids learned with file-sharing music. They could organize millions of small players in lateral economies of scale, and they could really decimate vertically integrated operations overnight. Then we saw it with the newspapers, the magazines. We saw it when Wikipedia, you know, trounced Encyclopedia Britannica. We saw it in the book industry. Now we're seeing it in energy in Germany, where millions of small players in a few years came together on an Internet of Things, and that energy Internet allows small players to come together in cooperatives, scale their activity laterally, lateral power, and within 5 years, the big power and energy companies of Germany had the same fate as the music and recording industries here and the newspaper and publishing industries. So this is the new message in my book, the Zero Marginal Cost Society. We are really on the cusp of a great advance in technology that allows us to move toward a world where we can democratize economic life, just like we began to democratize communication.
Well, just in the last minute then, Jeremy Rifkin, as you point out in your article at the Huffington Post, Beyond Obama's Plan, A New Economic Vision for Addressing Climate Change, that a Stanford University study says that if 20% of the world's available wind was harvested, it would generate seven times more electricity than we currently use to run the entire global economy. And also you talk about feed-in tariffs that the rest of the world has used to spur solar power, and only in the United States, California, Vermont, Maine, Oregon, Washington, Hawaii, and Rhode Island have even a cursory feed-in tariff. So
right.
Just give me a sense then of how we get over the cusp here. You've got the big dinosaurs controlling the economy or dominating the economy, and you've got this free wind and free sun out there ready to be harvested.
Right.
How do you get across the hump?
Well, you know, the environmental organizations today are talking about, you know, there's a coalition of the environmental groups talking about it's time to protest, it's time to take these actions to the streets and demonstrate that we're really committed. But if the whole commitment is just reducing CO2 and coal-fired power plants, I'm all for that, let's eliminate them, that's not a positive message about our future. That's just one small benchmark along the way. We've got a whole generation of young millennial men and women out there who grew up on the internet, and they are used to the idea of being empowered so that they can actually produce and share things with each other. So the next logical step is to go from producing and sharing YouTube videos and news blogs and information, entertainment, and sharing their own, producing and sharing their own renewable energy, their own 3D printed products, sharing their own clothes and toys and tools and whatever for their families on a collaborative commons. And it seems to me that new economic vision, that new economic system, the collaborative commons, is really the architecture for the younger generation. I would leave with this. Here's what I think what I'd leave with this point. There's a real generation shift here, Ian. You know, when we grew up, power was always considered pyramidal. The idea of peer-to-peer lateral power would be an oxymoron for an older generation. But when young people in the millennial generation think about power, they have a completely different idea. They don't talk about, you know, capitalism and socialism and right and left. It's not really in their vocabulary. When they view institutional behavior, millennial kids, young men and women, when they look at governments or political parties or school systems or businesses, they ask, is the power, the institutional power, centralized, top-down, proprietary, and closed? Or is the institutional power distributed, collaborative, transparent, open, and does it favor peer-to-peer lateral power? That's a real shift. And the Internet of Things platform provides a framework for a third industrial revolution and the emergence of this new economic system, a collaborative commons, in which we can actually produce and share our energy and goods and services at near-zero marginal cost, and in a sustainable circular economy. So it's here for the taking. Germany's doing it. China's beginning to do it. We need to follow that lead. And I think once Americans get the narrative, we can move very quick. I think the younger generation has to move beyond these simple stopgap measures on coal-fired plants. That's fine. But we need to move forward and actually advocate a new economic vision and game plan for the U.S. similar to the EU and China.
Well, Jeremy Rifkin, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure, Ian. Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Jeremy Rifkin, who is the author of The Zero Marginal Cost Society, The Internet of Things, The Collaborative Commons, and The Eclipse of Capitalism. He is an advisor to the European Union and to heads of state around the world, and is the president of the Foundation on Economic Trends in Washington, D.C., and his latest article at the Huffington Post is Beyond Obama's Plan, A New Economic Vision for Addressing Climate Change. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.